Hello everyone, this is Julia McCutcheon, founder and creative director of the International Association of Conscious and Creative Writers at IACCW.com. And welcome to our free monthly teleseminar interview for IACCW members, and a very warm welcome to all of our new members this month. Our intention with these events is to introduce you to the work, the wisdom, and the experience of international experts and successful authors to inspire you as a conscious and creative writer. So thank you for making the time to join us here on the call, and welcome also to those of you who are listening to the audio recording. Today's topic is the Four Noble Truths for Conscious and Creative Writers, and I'll be introducing my guest speaker, Gail Scher, in just a moment. First of all, for the benefit of our new members this month, I'll just explain how these calls are organized. So all members have the opportunity each month to email questions to us on the topic that we're discussing anytime ahead of the interview. And this is in case you're not able to make the live call, or in case you simply prefer to ask your questions by email. That's absolutely fine. And you just need to send any questions to support@iaccw.com, and as long as we receive them at least 24 hours in advance, we will do our best to include them. So this interview is due to last 60 minutes, and the audio recordings are posted to the members-only area at iaccw.com. And once you've logged in the usual way, you will find these on the past events page, which is in the left-hand column. Okay, let's move on then to today's interview with our special guest speaker, Gail Scher. Now, many years ago, a friend, colleague, and an IACCW charter member called Jackie Holder recommended Gail's work to me, and I bought two of her books, The Intuitive Writer and One Continuous Mistake. And I was deeply inspired by Gail's spiritual approach to writing, which resonated perfectly with my own personal and professional experience and passion for what I now refer to as the conscious, which is all about self-realization, and creative, which is about self-expression, the conscious and creative approach that we teach here at the IACCW. So fast forward to today, and I'm really delighted to introduce Gail Scher to you. Let me tell you a little more about Gail and her work. She draws from 4 decades of Buddhist practice and 3 decades of writing and teaching writing. And in addition to One Continuous Mistake, The Intuitive Writer, and another book called Writing the Fire, she has published over 30 chapbooks of poetry. She works one-on-one with writers internationally, witnessing their judgment grow increasingly precise and astute. And for more information about Gail and her work, I would very much recommend that you visit her website, which is at gailscher.com. So we are honored to have you as our guest speaker today, Gail. Thank you so much for joining us, and a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I just maybe want to say right from the beginning that because this is relevant to, I think, to the people I'm addressing, you said that you mentioned the earliness of the hour from my standpoint, which is 8 o'clock, as opposed to your time. And I just want you to know that I've already had my 2-hour writing period today, and I come here not only having done that, but ready for my normal work day. So this is in preparation for sometimes the work of being a writer. Actually, the real work is invisible. The real work comes from going to bed the night before early enough so that I can get up early enough to have 2 hours of writing before I arrive at my office at 8 o'clock to do something else.
Wonderful.
And this is not so much just about me, but about the mind behind making something happen with intention.
Mm, beautifully put. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, lovely. Well, we're off to a fabulous start already, Gail. That's really delightful. Thank you. Usually we start with inviting our speakers to share their story of their relationship with writing and how they came to be a writer and authorship generally. And you have a very long-standing relationship with writing and authorship. And I'd love to invite you to share your story, if you would.
Yes. In a way, it relates to what I just said, because you probably heard the sort of passion behind what I just said. And that stems from what on the surface looks like a sad story. But I think because it was so sad, there was a strength in me and a determination that was just like fierce. And perhaps that's been one of my, it turns out to be a great strength. But the way it all kind of unraveled is that I was coming to the end of my 11 years of practicing Zen Buddhism in a community, and I was at the monastery of our community and feeling increasingly miserable and unsuccessful and just like a failure altogether. And finally, one day I just had the thought, you know, everybody here in this community experiences my negativity and my resistance to practice and so forth. And I'm just not even going to get up from bed until I know what I want to do with my life, because I felt like I was dying. Mm. And the very first words in One Continuous Mistake is, writing saved my life, which you can read that and think, oh, you know, she's exaggerating. But the truth is I was totally dying. And even in the heart of a wonderful Buddhist community, here I was feeling like I was dying inside. So, sort of to make a long story short, I finally had the glimmer of a memory that when I was about 14, I had thought that I wanted to be a writer. And I had said something to my father, I think I want to be a writer. And he said, oh, everyone wants to be that. And I was so deflated that I just like put it on hold for 25 years. And this incident in the monastery was like that much time later. And then, but I did have the 11 years of Zen practice behind me, which was like, just get up and attend Zazen, and it doesn't matter how you feel, just do it. Mm-hmm. You attend periods of meditation. That's the practice. So I just transferred that to writing, and I said, okay, well, I'm just going to have writing periods. And I started that very day, and they felt really good, even though I didn't know what I was doing. And that's sort of the whole story in a nutshell. It was so satisfying that I just left the monastery and substituted writing practice for what I had already been doing, you know, many periods of Zazen a day. Well, I was having then two writing periods a day. And but what I intimated a minute ago about the fierceness, once I began, nothing, you know, I will allow nothing to get in the way of this practice. And I'm really like a lion. I mean, you know, just try and your head will get bitten off like instantly. And some of my writing students, I wish that they had more passion. Mm-hmm. You know, the slightest thing will deter them. And I think that, not to criticize, but just that they haven't had that experience of almost dying. Mm-hmm. So that it's like, the reason I can be so fierce is that I already know what happens when I don't write. I already know that. Mm-hmm. And it leads nowhere. And so I just don't go there anymore.
That's such a powerful story, Gail. I always love hearing how people have come to writing, and I never cease to be awed by the stories that people tell. But your story is particularly powerful, so thank you so much for sharing that. And that connection that you have with writing, it seems like once you gave yourself permission almost to begin, the relationship just, it sounds like it clicked into place straight away. Is that how it felt for you?
Yes, it has. And then, of course, like any other relationship, and that's exactly what it is a relationship. It's a relationship with not only the process of writing, but also with language itself. And at this point, you know, 30 years later or more, I feel like the written word, actually I get a kind of transmission from almost any written word. If someone writes me, you know, one sentence in a letter, it's like I know their whole being. I don't know. It's kind of I guess that goes with the territory, with any territory that you become with. You develop a sort of extrasensory around it.
Yes. I mean, would you say that there is a real energy that you feel from words? I mean, we know that the sacredness of words goes back to the dawn of time, really. And what you're saying here, I totally understand and resonate with, because there is a kind of an energy around words. I mean, is that how you would describe it, like an energy?
Yes. When I first started writing, as I had just described to you, my writing periods, what I said to myself, because I myself was amazed and confused a little bit, because I didn't really understand what was coming out. It wasn't like normal writing. And finally I realized that I was relating to every other quality in a word beside the meaning. And normally writers relate just to the meaning. And instead I was responding and cultivating and really featuring the aura, the energy, the color, the vibration, the sort of wind of language. And that's really what I was completely focused on, to the point where eventually when I started giving readings, I noticed that people in the audience would sort of, occasionally they would sort of giggle or laugh a little bit at times when a little bit of meaning seeped through. And so that alerted me to the fact that the meaning of words distracts us from all these other qualities in words that, you know, few people, well, poets, of course, pay attention to, but I'm explicitly paying attention, you know, to those qualities. I would almost say exclusively paying attention to those qualities, so that my poetry isn't, it doesn't make sense on the surface like normal, you know, writing does. But if you're very quiet, and this is where silence comes in, if you're very quiet, you will hear and absorb the meaning on another level. And you'll absorb the range of English on another level. And that actually brings me to something else I do want to say, because I don't think writers think, always at least, think in these terms. And I've noticed that some of my own writing students haven't. And so I'm going to, is it all right if I just...
Please do, yes, go ahead.
Right away from the beginning, I identified for myself what I really wanted in the long run to accomplish as a writer. And that, for me, it was, I wanted to stretch the English language. I was aware that a language like Tibetan can capture such a greater level of subtlety. Like in Tibetan, there's 17 words for the word love. And, you know, and in English, there's one and hardly anybody even knows what that means.
Mm.
And I felt like English is really beautiful to me and that it deserves to be used in a way that can hold those subtleties.
Mm.
And so I have not consciously, in other words, I don't just every day at my writing period think about that, but it was a deep intention right from the beginning. And over the years, I realize now that I've, in my latest work especially, I think I really succeeded in doing that.
Mm.
And the reason I wanted to mention that is that not so much to talk about myself, but I'll have writing students write something and then share it with other writing friends of theirs to get feedback. And the feedback they get is where the other writing is coming from in their own writing. Like if they present, you know, a kind of journal-like narrative to a novelist, the novelist will give feedback in terms of, you know, what would make this into a really good novel,
mm.
and so forth. And so I have to say to my student, well, that's excellent if you're about writing novels. But you need to know what you're about before you can edit what you're writing, because you can edit it any way you want. But if you don't know what you're about, basically, as a writer, how do you know how to craft what you're writing?
Mm.
And she was very confused because she had gotten feedback from a novelist and from a poet and from, you know, just someone who hadn't even thought of those things. And her head was spinning. And so I believe that she wasn't alone in getting confused by not having an initial, like, airplane view of where you want to go in general, because my method is all about non-goal orientation, so it sounds a little contradictory.
Mm.
But what I'm meaning here is to something that you hold just in a very deep part of yourself. And, you know, 20 or 30 years later, you may realize that it actually infiltrated its way into what you'd been doing all this time.
Mm, beautiful, beautiful. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think setting the initial intention, the overview, as you say, the big picture of what is your deepest core essence, what's really taking you to the point of putting those words on the page in the first place. I think identifying that is so key. And it is interesting that you have a non-goal orientation with your process, and I'd love to speak more about that. You've mentioned such a wealth of information already. I'd love to pick up on a couple of things, if I may.
Sure.
You talked about silence, and this is such a key, integral part of the whole, what I would call, conscious and creative process. And I have read some of the things that you say about silence, and you imply that your writing is silence rather than your writing being about silence or coming from silence.
Yes, exactly.
And I would love to invite you to say more about that, because silence is such an important integral part of this process that I'd love to invite you to share with us your experience of that.
This is an incredibly important concept, and it relates to what I said earlier about what I had identified shockingly to myself when I first started, that actually what I was about was everything about the word other than what we normally relate to, which is its meaning.
Mm.
And one of those one of those aspects is silence. And so when I'm writing, it isn't well, first of all, when I'm writing, it really is like meditation. And so it's already coming from a place that I don't like. I sometimes say that my writing doesn't come from my mind, that I'm writing from a place other than my mind, actually. And then, more importantly, when I'm revising and crafting what I'm, the first drafts and so forth, the effort is always about getting my ego out of it.
Mm.
And so it's a gradual process of spotting it, saying, oh, you know, that's just you know, but for lack of a better word right now, ego. And it always has a false ring to it. There's a stale ring to it, or a imitative ring to it, and we're all susceptible to this. We live in a culture and languages. We are surrounded by language, in many, you know, all over the place. In many, the newspaper, the email, and so forth. And by osmosis, we absorb ways of using language that we might even think is original, and it's actually imitative.
Mm.
So if you can tap into something beyond yourself, and aspects of language that are beyond yourself, like silence, which is just universal,
yes.
Then when you ultimately, what I'm looking for when I'm working on my poetry is that it there's no me there, for one thing, and it's almost like the sound of Om or something like that.
Mm.
That you don't take, you know, it's almost like it disappears before you read it, and when you're reading it, there's an experience, and then you don't even know what you read 2 seconds later.
Mm.
It just disappears right away. That's why I say it is silence as opposed to being about silence.
Mm. Mm.
The disappearing language, I think, maybe would be the gut of it, you know.
Mm. Mm. Disappearing language, yeah, thank you. So that takes me to the point of asking you, how do you do your preparation for writing then? Because the way that you've just been describing writing as being like meditation, and all that we hold dear here at the ICCW is the consciousness, the state of consciousness and being out of which the writing arises. So how do you prepare before you do your writing so that it is a meditation and that it is coming from a place other than your mind? Obviously, you have many, many years of Zazen practice. And I'm just wondering if you have anything that you can share with us about your preparation that people could learn from.
Yes, that's a really good question, because all writers, and I really would just want to validate this. I'm glad for the opportunity to validate this, because a lot of times writers feel guilty about, before I write, I clean my house or something like that, and they put themselves down for that. But actually, all writers prepare in some way, and And I think that from the largest perspective, you prepare by creating a space that's exclusive to the practice of writing, so that the vibrations and energy of that activity build up over time and support the activity.
Mm.
So that's the large kind of background preparation, is to have your writing space be absolutely, in its every detail, conducive for you in the way you need for writing to take place without self-consciousness and without fiddling around and, you know, all the things that will be a distraction. And then on a more moment-to-moment, like, you know, like today before my writing period, how do I prepare? Usually for me, since it's very early in the morning, you know, I'll get up about, it's usually about an hour or sometimes an hour and 15 minutes of just, you know, washing and I have a small space, so I have to transition it from where I sleep to it being my office, so to speak, my writing space, and then prepare some hot drink to have so that I'm warm and comfortable and satisfied, and just put everything I need where it, you know, where I need it. And then there's nothing else. I'm done, you know. And then when I sit down, the last thing is, and I say this in One Continuous Mistake, it's very important to dedicate your writing so that you don't, to dedicate the merit of this practice outwards to, you know, whatever, I mean, to all sentient beings or to the universe or to whatever is meaningful to you, but to give it away is the essence. And so I always start with a dedication. And I feel like that is very, very important, and that I know for myself, as soon as I do the dedication, my whole state of mind shifts, and I'm now in my writing period.
Beautiful.
It's the dedication is the transition piece.
Lovely, thank you. That's something that everybody can take forwards and apply. That's great, thank you. So moving into the Four Noble Truths, I'd love to ask you how you came up with these Four Noble Truths. What was the source? What brought you to identify the Four Noble Truths for writing?
Yes, the key word is identify. I didn't think them up. I basically observed what was going on in my process, and perhaps because I had waited so long before I began my writing practice, it was only a few years before I was already giving readings and publishing my poetry. So I had to notice then, it was just incumbent on me to reflect, well, what have I been doing that clearly was working? And mind you, I had just come from 11 years of practice that was totally not working. So, you know, here I am in a mere, you know, very short time, relatively for a writer, being noticed by very important writers and, you know, having readings that were well attended and so forth. This was very different. You know, this wasn't me being the flunky of the community, which I was really used to being. And how is this? And that's how I realized that these Four Noble Truths, that first of all, writers write. You know, I had kind of known I was a writer since I was 14, remember, but I wasn't writing. And my life was completely not happening properly, and everyone knew it around me. And I wanted to just validate that for writers, and I've never wavered on any of these truths, as a matter of fact. It's really, what I've really noticed is that, first of all, if you're a writer, you absolutely have to write, or your life does not feel correct. There's something about writers that it's like we're a special breed and we have special needs, and all writers have those, which they don't always know about. They don't always know that other writers feel the same way, and people who aren't writers don't have those imperatives. And so you know, as soon as I realized I'm a writer and that's why I'm so, you know, queer in other communities, then I started noticing that other writers were just like me. And I really want to say that, just in the name of time and everything, that of these four noble truths, the one that, well, the two that I think writers absolutely must acknowledge and often don't, and it's often the problem that they incur in their writing, in their trying to create this relationship with writing, it is this one, writers write, you know, to really just accept that they have to write and to not let anything interfere with that and do whatever it takes to make that happen in their lives. The other one is, I don't exactly say it in these Four Noble Truths, but it's implied, is to keep yourself not knowing. So the implication, writing is a process and you don't know what it's going to be until the end of the process, that not knowing is very, very important. And it's, I would say that by the time you become a writing student of mine, you pretty much are writing. But this one of keeping yourself not knowing is really hard for people. And it's hard in an unconscious way. Like I'll have a student, again and again, they'll come and they'll say, yeah, I know, just don't know, because I've said it to them so many times, they'll say it back to me. But then the next sentence is, you know, all of a sudden I realized exactly the sequence of events of how this, you know, this project is going to play itself out. And like, you know, it's going to go here and then here and then here. And then, you know, so, you know, of course, what they're doing is trying to know what their writing is. And then the next time they come back, they're already intimidated by this program that somehow isn't happening the way they had thought about it in their mind. So it's really important to not know where your writing is going, because you're bigger than your mind. That's the essence of it. You're bigger than your mind, so if you delegate to your mind the knowing, then you're going to be subservient to a lesser strong part of yourself.
That's very helpful, that last bit, in terms of clarifying. I was just going to ask if you have any advice to offer writers for remaining within the not knowing space, because not knowing is for most people an uncomfortable space to be in, because we're taught that it's not what it should be, that we should know, and so it's contrary to what we've often been taught. And so first of all, embracing and accepting the not knowing is a threshold to cross, and then remaining within it. And I'm wondering if you have some advice for people about that whole process of remaining within the not knowing.
It is helpful. I you know, not to be well, it doesn't have to be me. It can be anybody. It is helpful to work with somebody, because to be reminded, it's sort of like learning anything else that's hard to learn. If you have a coach or a mentor to remind you, then when you, at least in the initial stages when it is difficult to cross that barrier, because, as you say, we're all, you know, from preschool, we're taught to know and to want to know, and that knowing is a good thing. In writing, the knowing is keeping yourself not knowing.
Yes. Lovely. I like that. That's great. The writing, yeah, beautifully put. Thank you. So in terms of this first principle, I know we've touched on some of the others already, but just coming back to the writer's write principle, we understand in many cases that the essence of doing the writing is showing up and just starting and writing. And yet, despite the best of intentions, so many of the writers that I work with still struggle to do that on a regular basis. And I know that intention is a key point for you. In fact, it's perhaps essential. And you also say that we need to know how to harness the energy of intention to create a daily writing practice, which then becomes the cornerstone of our writing foundation. So how would you suggest that people go about harnessing the energy of intention to support them to establish this solid writing foundation that we know we need to do as writers?
Yes. I've touched on a few of the key features, one being creating the space that will then in itself be the environment that supports a certain activity. And this is coming from a spiritual principle of environment is stronger than will. So if you want to accomplish something, if you want to learn math and become a mathematician, you want to surround yourself with mathematicians. And that environment will be supportive of your becoming your own self a mathematician, as opposed to, you know, if you're always around other people, you won't get that input, that constant input. So you can create that input yourself with the writing space that you cultivate and that's really suited to you. It's ideally suited to you and gives you the kind of support that you will profit from. So the space is one way to, and the space just gets stronger and stronger over time. Pretty soon, I mean, the vibrations of your space will be very powerful, and you'll feel it as soon as you enter that space. And it's good to try not to, for writers especially, the temptation is to have, you know, if you're going to write on a computer, then you also use that computer for the internet and for your business and for everything else. And it's almost better. My writing computer doesn't even have the internet on it. You know, in fact, I don't even have the internet at home. I don't want that vibration of out there, all the things out there. I want to be in here, and so I don't even want it on the computer that I'm using for my writing. I mean, I'm extreme, and I understand. But if you can't do that, at least definitely don't check your email before your writing period. Just don't go there. Let it be your reward then, you know, for your writing, for your undistracted writing period. But, you know, again and again, people will, if they're going to have a morning writing period, well, before their writing period, they'll check their email, you know, wrong, because your mind then will be part of your intention in having writing periods is showing up with an alert and ready state of mind. And if you're worried or preoccupied with, you know, this upsetting email you just got, you won't be there. You just won't be there. So don't go there is the thing. You know, I guarantee you, you'll read your emails. You know, I guarantee it. You will definitely go there later. So not to worry. Just do your writing period now.
Yes. Okay, lovely. Thank you. And you've mentioned also the importance of process, and I know that this is absolutely fundamental for you as well, and it is the second of the Four Noble Truths, that writing is a process. And you prioritize process, and you say that working with process is a real key to unlocking our true potential. I'd love to invite you to say more about the importance of process.
Yes. I'm glad you're asking, because that is really key. The process as opposed to the goal, so that and what happens is writers will set out and say, I'm gonna write thus and so. And they're very determined, and it makes sense for them, and they want to do that, and so that's what they're doing. But then each and every writing period that they have, they expect to make progress, and they expect almost like a finished product or something, or they expect their writing to be, quote, good in just their daily writing period. But I don't see it that way. I see the daily writing period as the totally creative expression of whatever's inside of you that day. And then at a different time, not in your daily writing period, but maybe once a week, you'll do a revision period. And with a completely different state of mind, you'll take out the products of your 7 days of writing periods, and you'll go over them with an editor's viewpoint. And that's where your understanding of what you're about can come in. But even then, you're letting the writing tell you what it is. You don't tell the writing what it is. The writing will tell you what it is. And that's where if you think you know, you're not going to hear what the writing is telling you.
Yes.
The writing will tell you what it is, but you have to allow it to unfold, and that's where the process comes in.
And that is so different to what so many other people teach and practice, and I love the freshness of that allowing. It's a very yin feminine energy, the flow that you're describing, and allowing the meaning and the observations and the insights to come through and be reflected back to you, rather than imposing the meaning and the direction from the outside. So that's a very powerful way to do it.
A great Buddhist teacher, Chogyam Trungpa, once said that nothing truly creative ever comes from an aggressive state of mind. And by aggressive, he means, you know, sort of driven and goal-oriented. And I think he's saying the same thing, really, that by allowing and discovering and letting your writing tell you what it is, it's so much bigger than what you have to tell it. And so there, you just have to be submissive. You know, you really have to be submissive to your writing, at the same time making the writing happen, so there's something to be submissive to.
Sure. And then learning to interpret what the writing is telling you, perhaps, is part of that process too.
Yes. You have to learn. This whole process is all about increasingly refined level, listening to your writing and hearing what your authentic voice is as it is reflected back to you. You have to hear it and hear it and hear it, and then you get to, and that's where the editing, then you start editing out what isn't that.
Yes.
And pretty soon, it's sort of like being a sculptor.
Yes. That's beautiful. Yeah. So you've mentioned the authentic voice there, which is something that is so key also. I'd love to invite you to share with us how we recognize our authentic voice. Until we're very familiar with it, how do we really recognize that it is our authentic voice so that we can come back to our writing and revise and edit away everything that isn't that?
Yes. It almost, you know, I can't explain this, but it's almost like a body intelligence.
Yes.
You that's why you need to be very quiet and very centered in your writing practice, so that you can start identifying, you'll recognize like a kind of twinge in your stomach or something when it's correct. And it'll just be, it's sort of like eating just the right food, you know, that just absolutely hits the spot in that moment. It's kind of like, it's so satisfying. You almost can miss it. It's sort of like, you know, it's not a problem, and so you forget that it's correct.
Yeah.
So you increasingly learn, and not only learn, but you increasingly improve. You cultivate your body, your whole body, mind, experience to being more and more subtle in giving you that feedback.
Mm.
So that's another way that it's another way that it's a process, that writing is a process. It's a process also of fine-tuning yourself as your instrument.
Mm. Beautiful, yeah. And it's a very intuitive process, what you're describing here. That
absolutely,
whole
yes.
Body sense of knowing is a very intuitive knowing, with a capital K, perhaps.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I used to say when I was a Zen student, it was very apparent to me that Zen, Buddhism, is truly and ultimately it's understood with your body. It's not really understood with your mind. And I think that writing is the same way. You basically kind of get who you are as a writer with your body.
And it very much comes from the inside out with this approach, doesn't it?
That's
rather
right.
Than the other way around, where we're imposing what we think we should be writing about.
That's right. Exactly. And therein lies, you know, don't check your email. Because it's like the outside in, and then you're intimidated, and then it all unravels from there quickly. It quickly unravels from there. Because the unraveling looks like, oh, I'm no good. I'm never going to be able to do this anyway. You know, who cares anyway? This is never going to get published. It's that whole, there's a whole script there that again and again happens when writers forget that writing is a process and that it's not about how good it was today.
Yes, indeed. And there are so many possibilities there for writers to trip up on those obstacles, and we do have to navigate those obstacles as writers, don't we? I mean, there are those common obstacles that come from within us, such as the voice, which is the inner critic or whatever we want to call it, that actually shows up and just wants to diminish our sense of...
It does.
And I wonder if you could perhaps, from your wealth of experience, share some ideas on how we can work our way around these obstacles that come up, the most common obstacles. How do we find our way around these common obstacles?
That exactly is what the Four Noble Truths are designed to overcome. That problem does not happen at all with people who are doing this method. Because this method is designed to avoid that particular problem. And it does. It works. It truly works. And it makes sense that it works, because if you're involved in the process and your goal is to just attend your writing periods, then you're not even thinking about is this good? And there's this knowing in your mind that there's a set aside time, a regular time, to use your evaluative strengths to revise your work and craft it into what you want it to be, so that you don't need to rely on inspiration on any one particular day. I have found, in fact, that I'll leave my writing periods on certain days. You know, it just sort of happens to everyone. I'll have the sense one day that, oh, you know, boy, that was really good today. You know, I really think that was probably going to be good. Mm-hmm. And then other days thinking, you know, nothing happened. And I'm dead wrong when it comes to then revising it and really looking, you know, with a fresh mind at what I did, an objective mind. I'm so often, the days that I felt inspired are just, you know, I'll end up throwing the whole thing away. And other days that just seemed very ho-hum turn out to be quite interesting. And I've learned over time that it's just, I cannot tell, because I don't reread what I write until my revision period.
Okay. So the revision period is really key in this process, isn't it? Because
absolutely.
It gives you the, almost it's like giving yourself permission not to address any of the issues that will come up in revision because you know that there is a revision process to come.
Exactly. That's the whole point. That's the whole point of this, of the way this process is structured. Mm-hmm. That you know in your mind that you've got that all in place, so not to worry.
Yeah.
You don't need to leave your writing period thinking, you know, this was terrible, because you don't know. You actually don't know.
Indeed. So could you give us some guidelines about how to approach the revision session in the best possible way in the light of all that you've been saying?
Yes. You use your body as a tool to identify where the energy is in your writing. And you basically, I mean, I'll go so far as to say that simply, as you're starting out, you would almost just circle, like take a red pen and circle where the energy is in say, the 7 days of writing that you've just been doing that previous week. And then isolate, throw everything else away. Don't even keep the dead energy of anything that wasn't circled. And then just work with what's circled and see where that leads you. And it may even be just this kind of jumping off place for another writing period.
Mm.
But eventually, you're following the energy of your previous writing periods. And so in the end, your writing is going to jump off the page because it's just all going to be pure energy.
Beautiful, beautiful. I had a conversation with an author last week who's written a number of very successful books, and one of them was a very short book, and we were talking about how he had come to write all of his books, and that one particularly, and he said that he wrote 32,000 words and then discarded all of them apart from one paragraph, and that one paragraph then became the essence of that book.
Yes.
And that reminds me with what you're saying here, just working with the words or the phrases that you have circled that you feel in your body represent the energy for you, and
that's
just working with those.
And the energy that you want then, I'll notice that over time, I'll see an energy, but I'll see, now this is for more advanced writers, not for beginning writers, but you'll notice an energy that reminds you of some other project that actually isn't the energy that you want now, that's fresh and new and kind of almost unknown to you. So you even get to a point where you can distinguish an energy that's no longer relevant for you,
mm-hmm.
That isn't fresh enough. I wanted to give an example of, I had a friend who was a painter, and her process in painting was, let's say she was going to paint a cow. She would do 200 cows, and then she would throw away 199 of them.
Hmm. Goodness.
And I thought that was just marvelous.
Yes, indeed. Having the courage and
the
creative courage to really accept only what feels totally energetic.
That's
right.
Right.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So just to recap on the four truths, because we've jumped around a little bit here, and it's been delightful to do so because it's been a beautifully organic process here. But just to recap on the four truths, the first one is that writers write. The second one is writing is a process. The third one is that you don't know what your writing will be until the end of the process. And the fourth one is, if writing is your practice, the only way to fail is not to write. And we've said a lot relating to that already, but is there anything else that you would like to add specifically on those four truths before we kind of wrap up with a final comment?
I think that as you're reviewing what they are, that the most difficult one seems to be keeping yourself not knowing what your writing is until the end of the process.
Mm.
That concept of the writing will tell you what it is, and so you need to follow the energy. I think energy is maybe a more key point than meets the eye here.
Mm.
it's important in the words themselves, but it's also important in this one other way, which is that that's how you'll know that you're coming to the end of a particular writing voice or a writing project, is that the energy in your daily writing periods will start to wane, and you can push it a little, and then you'll notice that it's really waning. And it's the waning of the energy that tips you off to, I'm coming to the end of this. Mm. And that's when you might really start heavily attending your revision periods and really trying to bring whatever this is to embody what it wants to be. Mm. So energy comes in here in a yet another way, and I think maybe that's what I could add.
Mm. Lovely. On this energy, the sensing and the feeling of energy, we were saying earlier about it being like a whole body knowing. One of the aspects that I've noticed in my own practice and also working with the many writers that I have over the years is that not everybody is that connected with their body, because they often are sitting up in their mind and are starting from that place of being in the mind. And so in terms of helping people who perhaps don't easily feel the energy initially, are there any other final tips that you'd like to give that would help people to become more conscious of the energy? Because it is so key here to all that you're
yes.
saying. Anything else that you can share here?
Yes, I think that this goes back to that period, that little moment extending what would be a moment of dedicating your practice, in other words, giving it out to the universe, giving the merit of your practice out to the universe, that's an energy. That's a reversing of the energy from being like belonging to you and something that you're owning and coveting to expanding and sending it out into space. And so if you could... If that's a problem for you, if this energy issue is a problem for you, to maybe have a slightly longer, even a full 5 minutes or something, of not only dedication but meditation
yes.
at the beginning of your period. You know, even if it's as simple as just following your breath,
yes.
and then at the end of even a few minutes, it's very powerful. Then you do your dedication. And I think that energetically, the space just completely changes.
Mm. And the truth is that the more that you show up and do the practice, even if you don't feel it very obviously initially, the cumulative effects of the practice will lead you to sense subtle changes. And then gradually you'll learn to feel the energy within you. Would you agree with that?
I would. And go one more step is that if you have patience to sit there in your writing chair without writing, to just let yourself not even write, but to just be present for writing, then... Your whole writing period could go by, and then at the very end, all of a sudden, you'll start hearing the writing, and it will emerge up in and of its own and surprise you.
Yes, the image that just came to mind when you were describing that actually was of a Zen master who is about to do some calligraphy, and just the image of no action whatsoever, just complete stillness and meditation. And then just beautifully and gracefully the action arises out of that stillness and the calligraphy is made. And
yeah.
that's the image that came to me when you were describing that, that even at the end of being present and patient in your writing period, it may be that you just write one sentence as a
yes.
result of that being
yes.
present.
Even one word. Even one word. If you get the one right word, you've made it for your writing period.
Yeah.
This is where thinking, is what's tripping you up.
Yeah. Beautiful.
But that's a beautiful. You really got it. That's exactly correct.
Lovely. Gail, this is such a delightful conversation. I would love to continue it, but sadly we are virtually out of time. And so what I would love to do is invite you to share with our listeners how they can follow up with you, because I'm sure that many of them will want to do so. So what would you like to share with people in terms of how they can find out more about you and your work?
Well, I truly love to help writers and work with writers, and I do it usually the rhythm is one meeting with me every 3 weeks, every third week, and it's a good inner rhythm for people to cultivate. And I can be contacted at my email, which is gail@nightcrane.com, nightcrane.com. It's my it's the name of my small press. And to please go to my website that you've already mentioned, gailshare.com,
mm-hmm.
To find out anything you need to know about me.
Lovely. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Gail. That really has been outstanding, and I am very confident that people will have taken away more than they could have ever bargained for from this conversation.
I hope so.
Yes, your words are pointing to such an immense space of truth and being, and I really appreciate all that you have shared with us here today. Thank you so much, Gail.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure entirely.
We are honored. So that is all we have time for, unfortunately. So thanks again to my special guest, Gail Scher, and thanks to all of you for joining us here on the call. We will look forward to catching up with you next month when our featured guest speaker will be Dana Lynn Smith, who will be speaking to us on how to develop a book marketing plan. So we're shifting from yin to yang next month and learning how to take our work out into the world once we have gone through this process of the crafting and the creating that Gail has so beautifully described with us here today. So thanks again to all of you for joining us. I wish you a wonderful rest of day or evening, wherever you are in the world, and we will look forward to catching up with you again very soon. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.